Welcome to Happy Hour. Happy Monday, everybody. Hey, he's Adam Haraha. I'm Sean Cantwell. Absolutely beautiful day today.
Oh, yeah. It's been nice. Yesterday was really good. We got some yard work. Actual yard work, I know.
Wow. You don't say.
Yeah.
And it's not even like overly, like 65. I mean, it's about perfect for me.
This is why you could do porch drinking, light a little bit of a fire, and it works.
Right. Did you do a little bit of porch drinking over the weekend?
Backyard drinking by the koi pond? Yes, I did.
Nice. Nicely done, sir. We were going to fire up the fire table, but then Saturday it kind of started, it was like threatening rain for a while. We kind of decided against that. Then I had a gig to go to, so it just kind of didn't work out. But, I mean, would have been, the perfect weekend for it, man.
We've got plenty of weeks to do that because you've got one of those cool fire tables. I love those so much.
Those things are awesome. Like I can't possibly recommend enough. If you don't have one, go get one.
We're redoing the patio, and I want to invest in one of those. I just think they look cool, and it's not like you have to keep putting wood on there. It doesn't stink. Like if you get the wrong piece of wood, I mean, some people are like, oh, I like it when you burn this. If you get the wrong piece of wood, it can ruin your whole day because that gets in your hair, gets in your clothes.
Yeah, like Rachel has no problem with that sort of thing. She's like, fine, just the whole campfire smell thing. Like, I don't want to smell like that for the next week if that's all the same to you.
It depends on the wood. I mean, and there's, I think it's like pine that just, burn that and just, oh, God.
Oh, good times. It's going to be a fun summer all the way around. We're going to be doing plenty of that. I'm sure we're going to be getting sent on the road to do a bunch of festivals and live remotes and all that stuff.
Yeah, rubbing elbows with the people.
Finally actually have some stickers in stock that were supposed to come last August before Lapeer Days, but because the Postal Service is just so wonderful, I finally get a box or a little, big old envelope in front of the studio door today with a bunch of mail that was supposed to be delivered 12 to 18 months ago.
I got a CD from a band.
They're not even together anymore.
They're probably like, man, they didn't even like reach out to us or anything. They're jerks. They sent it out back in April of 2023.
And we're just getting it today.
Yeah.
Like, I came and saw that. Like, I honestly thought these stickers were never going to get here, that we just weren't going to have this stuff. I wasn't about to shell out another, couple hundred bucks more in. And then, so this is where they've been the whole time for nearly a year.
Yeah, one of our neighbors got a hold of it.
Not even neighbors in this building. Yeah. Like, a couple, like two or three doors down the street from us.
Well, I went to the post office. You remember, I went to the post office, and he's like, where did that go? I was like, well, they said they left it on the mailbox. Bank of mailboxes. I'm like, well, that's great. So somebody probably took off with it. Some kids are using stickers all over their room of South Cereal. It doesn't even listen to the show.
Right, exactly. That doesn't do us any good.
And then they told you that our address was undeliverable.
Correct. Yeah, that's the word I'd gotten. Our address was undeliverable.
Yeah.
I went and checked the mailbox. There was only one thing in it. Looks plenty deliverable to me.
Yeah.
But, that's just how it works. They apparently have enough time to call into other radio shows and complain when you use the term snail mail. But if maybe they spent a little less time doing that and, getting people's stuff to them in a somewhat timely fashion, maybe the people wouldn't refer to you as snail mail. Just putting that out there. Probably should just apologize to postal workers right off the jump today. But
I'm just putting us out there. After 18 months, a literal snail.
Would have gotten this stuff here faster. Would have honestly got this stuff here faster than this.
Yep.
I just don't understand it, man.
So we're starting the apology list today with the postal office.
Yep. We're just making sure that nothing's ever going to get delivered to this building again. That's really what's going on here.
The bills made it, though.
Yeah, all the bills and all that stuff. Those always seem to make it, unless it's something particularly urgent, in which case, this is already past due, but five times over.
Uh huh.
So that's the fun of my day today. We'll get to actual sports stuff coming up because I've got to go on a bit of a rant about the Tigers because. Yeah, you can't get... I mean, you got swept by the Yankees, which is to be expected, but you can't do it the way they did it. We'll get into that next. plenty of other stuff to do today. We missed out on doing Judgment on Friday because, you know, we had Bob Lawson in studio.
Good guy.
Talking hockey, talking all things hockey. So we didn't get time to do our normal ridiculousness that you've, well, come to expect from this fine clown show of a production. So we'll do all that coming up. I'm sure you're going to have some hockey to discuss because you've always got hockey things to talk about. There's at least one you know I'm going to laugh about.
Oh, yeah.
We'll do all that coming up. A lot of stuff today. Loaded baked potato of a show. Stick around. It is happy hour back after this. So we have to talk about the Tigers. There's no way we can't. There's no way we can get around this. We have to discuss this, whatever this quote-unquote baseball team is that we're looking at.
Quote-unquote. Allegedly.
And it's weird saying this because you are currently sitting at two games above 500, even after getting swept by the Yankees. But I don't feel like I can really truly call this a competent baseball team in any sense because I watched that team attempt to hit and put up a grand total of 6 runs all weekend against the Yankees.
Yikes.
It's not good. And it's getting more atrocious by the day. And we know why it is. It's been this way from the jump. It's the hitting. The hitting's not there. There is no offense to speak of on this team. It's just not there. And for whatever reason, Scott Harris has refused to address it, and very much to the detriment of the guys who are here. And one of those is kind of the focal point here that I wanted to touch on, that being Spencer Torkelson.
Tork?
Who is the only first baseman in the major leagues this season who has yet to hit a home run through a month and change of this season. The only one who has yet to hit a home run. And first base is typically a premium offensive position where you expect there to be a little bit of pop in the bat, and Tork hit a few of them last year. But so far, he couldn't hit the broadside of a barn, this guy. It's not been good. He's at 216 right now. He's got an OPS below 600, which is just abysmal in and of itself. I mean, you've also got two guys on the roster who are even worse than that, but we'll get to that in a minute. But this is a guy who's expected to be the future of your franchise, expected to be the cornerstone of this offense. And you saw bits of it last year. He kind of heated up at the end of the season, hit 31 home runs, got the batting average up to a almost something approaching close to respectable 233. And so far, nothing. The hitting's just not there at all. And A.J. Hinch has been asked about this quite a bit. The fan base is starting to turn on Tork, certainly. And A.J. Hinch was quoted on Saturday as saying that, well, we're moving him down the order, and if he keeps hitting like this, where he's going to move next is next to me on the bench.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what's going on. Do you think maybe he's got a injury he's not being honest about, or is he just snake bit?
It's definitely not an injury, at least not as far as we can tell. And if that were the case, you'd think they'd pull him out of the lineup because this isn't exactly helping things any.
Right.
Talking about his timing and everything else, like it's timing messing with the mechanics and so on and so forth. You hear all this stuff, but he's already batting like 7th in the order, and they're talking about, you know, outright benching him, which isn't going to help his case any either.
Send him down to Toledo?
I don't know if that'll help, because here's the problem with that. The only way he's going to get it right is by hitting major league pitching. If he's tearing the cover off the ball in Toledo and gets called back up, he's still not hitting major league pitching necessarily. I mean, while I think that may ultimately be your only option here, I mean, he's not getting any younger. He's 24. Like, you should have at least figured out how to hit a major league fastball by now.
No, I mean, point taken. But, I mean, if he goes down there and is able to get some hits, maybe builds up his confidence when he comes up, and maybe that translates to the majors.
Possible, like entirely possible, but also, who are you calling up to replace him in the lineup? your offense and your farm system is as barren as it gets. There's nobody down there right now that you could pull up here that would probably come close to competently hitting major league pitching. That's the other problem you run into. Like, there's no help in the pipeline. And I will say I do think in a couple ways Torque's getting a bit of a raw deal here. Or has gotten over the course of his career with Detroit. Because you called him and Riley Green up fairly early on and basically told him, you're the entire offense, just so you know. Like, if this team struggles, it's all on you because we're not getting you any help whatsoever.
No pressure.
No pressure, but you're our only hope. And 3 years into his career, they still haven't gotten anyone around him who can hit. Which means they don't have to pitch to him at any rate. I mean, right now they might as well pitch to him because the way he's hitting, it wouldn't make a difference. But there's a difference between, you know, bringing in established guys who know they can hit, who have that confidence, and then starting to build up a team of young guys around them, and taking a team that is completely and utterly devoid of talent on the offensive side of the ball, and adding two young, like big, highly touted prospects, and putting all that pressure on them, and like, you're it. If this thing sinks, it's all your fault. And that's basically what the Tigers have done for the last couple of years with him and Riley Green. Now, fortunately, Riley Green has managed to very much step up and handle that pressure about as well as you could expect anybody in this league to do so. Torque started off really bad last year. I think a lot of people thought he was going to get sent down by the All-Star break last season. Turned it down a bit towards the end of the year and is struggling again to start this year. You think maybe if Scott Harris would have gone out and acquired somebody in addition to Mark Canha, that we wouldn't be sitting here right now with Torque with zero confidence whatsoever at the plate? I don't think we'd be looking at that at all. I think you'd see something closer to what you saw at the end of last year. But, like, he's not exactly handling the pressure well of being, having been counted out to be the guy or one of the two guys. Like, it's him and Riley Green. Javi Baez just doesn't care.
That's apparent.
Canha can only do so much. And then there's the rest of your lineup, which is kind of the other point I wanted to make. Why are we now piling on Torque, a kid who has had ridiculously insurmountable expectations put upon him since he's been in Detroit, basically since the day he got drafted? But yet, no one says anything about Javi Baez anymore, a guy who's so bad they barely put him in the lineup. No one says anything about Parker Meadows, who can't even hit 100. In no other organization would you be batting .097 wow, with an OPS of under 500 and still have a job, much less be an everyday player in the lineup. No other organization would allow that sort of thing.
Nope.
Colt Keith, who they, for whatever reason, gave a stupid amount of money to. They signed this guy to a $29 million deal before he'd ever taken a swing in the major leagues. And so far, he has the worst OPS of any player in Major League Baseball, of any everyday player. OPS of .399. He's batting .152. How is he still in the lineup? How has he not been sent down? Look at either of the guys who are supposed to be catchers on this team, they're both hitting like a combined .177. But yet Torkelson is all of a sudden the whipping boy. But we can trot out Jake Rogers or Carson Kelly or Colt Keith on a daily basis or Parker Meadows, who can't crack the Mendoza line between the four of them. But we put all this pressure on Torque. Like, you're our only hope here because we refuse to put a real team around you when half of this lineup is even worse than you. That's ridiculous. And that's, quite frankly, an indictment on Scott Harris and a failure as an organization that you have put your touted star prospect, the future of the franchise, in such a spot that he can't possibly win. How is there not more ire being directed towards the front office? Like, why are we not putting the Ilitches and Scott Harris and company's feet to the fire? I can't even be mad at A.J. Hinch. A.J. Hinch just has been given absolute garbage and expected to make a five-star, five-course meal with it. I can't be mad at him. They've given him nothing. There's nothing in the minors for him to do. Nothing for them down there that he could, you know, plug in the lineup. It's not like you have just the next big thing waiting down there to replace any of these guys. Although I submit that no one could hit worse than Meadows and Keith are right now. And you're basically putting all of your hope in a guy who can't handle the pressure, one guy who amazingly is, despite everything else, and a starting pitching staff that has gotten incredibly lucky to thus far have been as healthy as it is, and a bullpen that for the most part has been pretty stellar. And that's not going to last. Like, if you look at, like, the top 50 pitchers right now in MLB, like, about half of them are on the injured list.
Wow.
I mean, look over at Cleveland. You've basically got, you've got one guy who's dead and another who is on the 10-day DL for a significant amount of time, and those are the two best pitchers you have. Like, you're getting lucky in not having to face Shane Bieber because he's not going to be a functional pitcher until sometime next season. And then you sit there and look at it, like, and you see how just terrible these other rotations are because they're just having to throw garbage out there because their first, second, third options are just gone. You've gotten incredibly lucky so far when it's come to injuries, which is a nice change of pace from seasons past where it seemed like everyone was getting injured. You're getting Tommy John. You're getting Tommy John. Everybody's getting Tommy John.
Ironically, except for you, Tommy.
So, with that in mind, you know that's not going to last. It can't last. That's just not the way this works. You're basically counting on, like, Tarik Skubal and Casey Mize to go out there and pitch you 220-some innings, which has never happened for either of these guys. Like, Skubal's maxed out for his career at 149 innings in a season. Like, they're not going to stay healthy all year. He's maxed out as far as number of starts he's made for his career in a season at 29. And he's only come close to that once. Every other year it's been 21 or less. Injuries happen in this sport. The way pitchers are throwing now and throwing harder and with more movement than ever before, pitchers are more susceptible to injury than they've ever been. You add on the whole thing with the pitch clock, which I don't know if it really is causing injuries like a lot of these guys think it is. If that's necessarily because, oh, well, they got to turn around and throw again so quickly, that the throwing off their timing probably isn't helping in that regard. And it does seem like you have a lot more pitchers who are getting a lot more injured since that's been implemented. I can't say correlation means causation here, but it's a lot of stuff that adds up to suggest that so far you've gotten extraordinarily lucky that everyone's staying healthy and that is not likely to carry through all year. And while you are surprisingly deep with the pitching, like, you can call Matt Manning up and he'll be fine if he has to be in your rotation for an extended amount of time. You got a couple other guys that will probably also do enough to get you by there. You can't win every game 1-0. That's just not how that works. You're not going to have the ability to just shut down every offense in MLB every night, but that's seemingly the only way you can win games. Like, you're not going to win a slugfest 95% of the time. Like, that's just not feasible. It's just not a thing that is likely to happen. Then even if you get lucky and you stay relatively healthy, it means you only have to have a few appearances from Matt Manning in the rotation or, you know, get injuries to the bullpen and Bo Breeski or Mason Engler have to go in there. It's still not going to be enough to win games every night. Even if you're putting up a 2-3 run performance over nine innings, which entirely admirable, any team in Major League Baseball should be able to win if your pitching can hold to 3 runs in 9 innings. But we have no faith that the Tigers can do that. We don't know that they can make it to 3 runs on any given night. Like we saw the one series where the bats just exploded against St. Louis. Other than that, it's been abysmal to watch. Just watching these guys just flailing at the plate. And I know this isn't sustainable. You look at the other teams in this league, you have one of the best pitching staffs out there, but you have teams that just cannot put points on the board except for like once a week or so. You might get a 6-run performance against a garbage KC team, 11 runs against a not that great St. Louis team, or you get lucky and you hang 7 on Tampa Bay, but those aren't coming nearly often enough for that to really stick. And again, when you have 4 guys in your daily lineup that are hitting below 200 and you have no viable option to replace them, it's an indictment on Scott Harris, or possibly an indictment on the man upstairs to not give you the money or authorize you to spend the money to go out and do what needs to be done. Like, you're going to be out of the race by probably the All-Star break if this keeps up. The pitching's going to... The wheels are eventually going to come off. There was a few years ago, God, it's probably about a decade now, where, I think it was Atlanta, you had the 3 best relievers, like the perfect 7, 8, 9 man, in your bullpen. And they were pitching basically every night. And that worked for a while. But by the end of the season, basically all of them, Kimbrel, the Venters, O'Flaherty, basically all falling apart because they were pitching so many innings that eventually, by the time they got to the end of the season, there was nothing left. And that's going to happen here. If you can't give those guys some rest, can't give them, throw these other guys in for some garbage time because you can't trust your hitting. On that note, let's hit a break. It is happy hour at Solid State Radio. It is happy hour, so let's take a quick break from sports and how, quite frankly, Comcast is doing you a favor by pulling Bally Sports off the air so you don't have to be subjected to this putrid garbage baseball team. So let's get into... but please listen to the Tigers all season long on WTGV 97.7 FM. Because there's just nothing like, even if the team's bad, just to sit out on the deck with a beer, listen to Dan Dickerson call the game. Like, it's just summer. It just feels like summer.
Yep.
And then, just tune them out when the All-Star break comes around. It's plus a background noise,
Yep, there you go.
So let's do a little bit of advice giving, since we didn't do this bit on Friday, because Bob Lawson kind of monopolized the show. Let's get into a little bit of Sean and Adam's unsolicited advice, where real people with real problems submit real questions to real advice columnists. Unfortunately for them, we got our hands on them, we intercepted, and I think we give better advice than the people who get paid to do this for a living.
We do. We really do.
There may be a few lives lost in the process, a few casualties and lives destroyed, but...
Collateral damage.
That just happens sometimes when you're as good at this as we are.
Sure.
Dear somebody who cares, after 10 years of being with my wife, including 8 years of marriage, I accidentally discovered she was having affairs online. She put me through weeks of lies, denial, minimizing, and obfuscating before finally giving me full disclosure. At this point, I know I'll never know if I can believe her after 7 years of off and on cheating with one main partner and 2 others. Even if I were to believe she's remorseful and has changed, it's hard to live what's already happened. It's been 15 months. I can't get past the pain of the betrayal and the feeling that she didn't love or respect me for most of our relationship. In addition, there are images I can't get out of my head. I want to leave, but finances and young children make it complicated. Also, my wife will cry, get dramatic, and make me feel bad, telling me she'll just go to a homeless shelter. I don't know if she's purposely trying to make me feel guilty or what. Please help.
Wow. I mean, this is a new world we live in where you can be cheated on with a computer, and it is cheating. There are some people will say, well, it's just innocent flirting. It's online. It doesn't mean anything. It does. Even though there's no physical contact that you know of, it's, devoting your time to somebody who's not your partner. So it is very much, by definition, cheating. It's good that he's looking at it from the kid standpoint, but you got to do something. You can't live like this, living with her trying to push the guilt off onto you, wondering if I broke up with somebody because I couldn't trust her. And it was just, it wasn't fair to her, and it certainly wasn't fair to me. So, you know, yeah, sometimes you just got to cut things out. I would suggest counseling, like some severe counseling. See if you can get through it that way. Other than that, I guess let her go to a homeless shelter.
And that was going to be my advice, you know, just let her go to a homeless shelter then. Like, yeah. Don't let this woman guilt you into keeping her around when it's clear she has no love or respect for you. No. Don't suffer any of that. Like, call her on, like, I'll just go and die in a gutter somewhere. Fine. You have fun with that. You deserve it.
Well, I mean, listen, sweetheart, you've been talking to two or three other guys. Maybe one of them would put you up.
Right? That's the other thing. Like, well, I mean, it certainly you've made some other contacts. I'm sure you won't be homeless for long.
Right,
you
know, right.
Call one of your old boyfriends up.
Oh, you're going to go to the homeless shelter? You sure they got Wi-Fi there? You hussy. I mean, she may be one of those people that does really generally love her husband and, you know, wants to be a wife in every way, shape, or fashion, but she also has that need to scope around, I guess, just flirt around. Some people are like that, but...
Well, no, absolutely not.
If that's not the way he is, then that means they're incompatible.
Absolutely not. Like, I don't believe that if you loved him, you wouldn't have gone sneaking around on him. I don't think that for a second.
I agree.
You love this person. If you're willing to live this whole secret double life, like, if you want to open the relationship, then you tell your husband you want to open the relationship. You don't just go sneaking around and then, oh, let him find out and be heartbroken and then make him feel like the bad guy afterwards.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah, that's a real kick to the gut. You're making him look like the bad guy because you've got to be a big flirt online.
So more than a flirt.
Yeah.
It sounds like she's actively carrying on, like, relationships with other people. It's not... Like
he can't get the images out of his head, so I'm sure she's probably received pictures of...
I'm sure she has, but I'm sure that's also not the extent of it.
Right.
Like, there have been physical meetups and hookups and things, I'm sure.
I guess that is the very definition of cheating, and you try counseling. I try it and see if you can get past it, because at this point anymore, we don't care about what she thinks. You gotta decide for yourself if you can live with this. And if the answer is no, well, then you need to pack things up. Save all those texts, save all that computer stuff, because that could really come in handy with a lawyer.
Oh, yeah. You've got quite the case for your for getting primary custody of the kids.
Yep.
That's for sure.
Yep. Yep, absolutely. So, I mean... This sucks. Make this a cautionary tale to everybody else listening that, yeah.
This whole radio show is a cautionary tale.
Number one,
you should stay in school.
Yeah. Don't go into radio.
Yep.
And also, don't flirt with people online and sending pictures and suggesting hookups and everything else, because that is, by at least our definition, that's cheating.
Really? That's most people's definition.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you take two things from this radio show, let those be the two things.
Yep.
Want to do another one of these?
Sure.
Dear anybody other than Sean and Adam.
Uh-oh.
3 years ago, my best friend and I had a falling out. When she asked for my opinion on her new fiancé and their relationship, I expressed some concern as gently as I could. I said it was concerning that they'd only known each other for 3 months, that I was her best friend that had never met him, he had no interest in meeting her friends, and that the only time she had spoken to me about him before announcing the engagement were to talk through fights they had, where he took rather nasty stances against totally normal things, her having other men's phone numbers saved in her phone, etc. She told me I never supported any of her relationships, this one was better than previous ones, and I obviously didn't actually care for her. I told her that wasn't true, that I actually loved her so much I was willing to tell her things I could see she didn't want to hear. About a week after that fight, she called me in the middle of the night from the bathroom of a party and told me she's concerned about how often she's been using different drugs since starting the relationship. I found out where she was, picked her up, and brought her back to my house. In the morning, she was already gone when I woke up. I tried to call or text her every day for 2 weeks after that, leaving her messages that I loved her and was there for her and ready to help her when she wanted it. She never answered or acknowledged anything. She also disappeared off all social media. I went to her apartment at the end of the 2 weeks, and there was a for rent sign in the window with all her belongings cleared out. She had said she and her fiancé found a new place and were going to be moving in together, but I didn't know where it was. All this was about a month before my wedding, where she was supposed to be a bridesmaid.
Oh, boy.
She dropped out of all wedding-related conversations as well and didn't come to the bridal shower. The night before the wedding, she called and asked if it would be okay for her to come still. I told her, of course. I didn't push her to talk about anything she didn't want to, and just made sure to deliver the message that I love her and support her while she was there. Immediately after the ceremony, my husband and I heard some shouting from the front entrance of the hotel. It was her fiancé who was telling her that they needed to leave. She waved goodbye and got to the car. I smiled and lied to anyone that asked and said she'd gotten a terrible migraine and was unfortunately home in bed, then cried in the shower at the end of the night, knowing she was truly gone from my life. I sent her one more text saying that she would always be there if she ever needed anything and to reach out when she was ready to. I never heard anything. Last week, my mom sent me a picture of the police blotter in the newspaper from her town.
Oh, no.
And asked if this was my friend in the mugshot picture.
Oh, no.
It was listed along with her first name and the previous fiancé's last name. She got arrested for drunk driving with her 2-year-old son in the car.
Oh, no.
My heart broke all over again. Without hearing from her or about her, I'd been able to convince myself she left the bad relationship, gone back to complete that master's degree she wanted to, and was happy and healthy. This tells a different story. I know I did what I could for her, and she didn't want to hear what I was saying or accept my help, but I feel guilty. How do I get past this?
There's nothing you can do. You've done everything you possibly can. I mean, it sounds like she's on drugs. It sounds like that fiance is probably her dealer.
And that would explain a lot.
She threw away your guys' relationship for some POS guy. It sounds like he's a real control freak. Until she wisens up and gets rid of that guy, or at least lays down the law with him, say, listen, I'm going to see my friends. That's just the way it is.
Clearly that's not happening.
There's nothing you can do. You've done everything. You've left the door open, but she's got to walk in. I mean, what are you going to kidnap her? Are you going to have an intervention?
Maybe.
That's not a good idea.
No, it's not a good idea.
Kidnapping's a felony.
And you also have a guy who clearly is rather controlling and abusive, at least in some facet. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if he's going to come back to get her, and he's going to take her by any means necessary.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you have your own family to worry about.
If you want to have a shootout in your house, by all means, but I don't recommend that for most people.
No, so, I mean, I think you've done everything you possibly can.
You have. There's really nothing else you can do here that I think is going to get you what it is that you want, which is, you know, a relationship with your friend again. Like, I hate to tell you, it's clearly not going to happen. She's
it sounds
just
like there's addiction.
Yeah.
She one of the classic things of addiction is they cut out people out of their life who are doing well because they don't want to be around somebody who's successful. They only want to be around other people, other addicts. So they feel validated with their addiction. So it sucks because there's a kid involved, you know?
Yeah, that makes it even worse. The fact that there's children involved in this. Like,
yeah.
And you're just going on a dark path. Like, I worry for these kids.
Yep.
But at the end of the day, I guess, there's really no choice but to let the legal system take care of this and hope that she doesn't do anything, you know, anything stupid to herself or them.
Yeah.
Like, what can you do?
There's nothing else. I mean, she has shown that she is a really good friend. She's kept the lines of communication open. She still allowed her to come to her wedding after she's stiffened out on being in the wedding. This friend is probably the most lenient friend I've ever heard of in my life. And there's nothing you can do. You can't make her do anything. And even if you could, you probably wouldn't want to. That's her fiance's job, apparently, or her husband's job now.
Yeah.
So I would say, you know, every 6 months, send her a text. But other than that, don't beat yourself up over it because
There's nothing you could have done.
That's just going to torture you.
Yeah, that's going to ruin. Like, her life's already basically ruined. That's just going to ruin yours, too. And there's literally no point to doing that.
Correct.
Let's do something maybe a little less high stakes, shall we?
I don't like how you worded that, but let's go.
No, this one's going to be a little lighter than the last one.
Okay.
Dear, oh God, it's them, isn't it?
It is.
I'm 25 and lucky to be studying overseas in France. It is a financial struggle, but worth the effort, I think. I don't splurge on much of anything, I can't really, but I do indulge my love of breakfast. I'll go out in the morning and buy a single buttery croissant, a bit of jam, some rich cheese, a few pieces of fruit, and an espresso. I bring it all back to my tiny apartment and enjoy it by an open window. God, you already sound like the most stuck-up person in the universe.
Oh, this is so much pretentiousness.
I recently had a friend from the U.S. come to visit. She is not a morning person and was asleep when I went to get my breakfast. She rose while I was enjoying it in the morning sun. She asked, "What's for breakfast?" I told her there was muesli and other cereal in the pantry, a baguette from the night before, and an egg if she wished one. I also mentioned I had instant coffee unless she'd like to go to the corner cafe. She said she'd prefer to have what I was having. I told her it was my special breakfast, an indulgence I could barely afford, and did not have enough to share. She was rather upset, I think. She was a bit sullen the rest of the day. That evening, she told me I was an awful host to eat something so lovely in front of a guest and not provide the same for her. I explained again about my limited resources and the idea that this was just a little thing I did for just myself. I did not have my special breakfast again while she was there, and she returned to the U.S. a few days later. I have not heard from her since she left. Was I as poor a host as she says? Do I owe her an apology?
I mean... I probably wouldn't have made that decision with the guest there. I mean, was it this major faux pas? Did it require a big blow up? No, it was a minor thing. But yeah, it's kind of like, you know, if I had you over and, you know, I'm eating, you know, chicken wings and stuff like that, and I offer you cereal, you'd be like, "What's going on here, dude?"
Right.
So, I mean, you knew you had a guest. It is a treat for yourself. It's something that you give to yourself, but. If you don't have enough for everybody else, and maybe take that day off, you know?
I mean, is this really so expensive? This, you know, a croissant and a, you know, some jam and a couple pieces of, like, is that really something that's so ungodly expensive when you apparently have the money to, you know, shack up in France?
Right.
In Paris? Like, is this really something that's so expensive that you couldn't possibly do the same for your friend? If so, then don't do it while she's there.
Right.
Like, I feel like that's the basic rule. If you can't afford to enjoy your, you know, treat, you know, share your treat with your person who's staying with you, then don't right. do it. That's just right. kind of rude not yeah. to offer. Like, we're sitting making dinner at the house, like, and you still happen to be there, you know, passed out on my couch. Like,
that's happened.
Maybe once or twice.
Sure.
Like, I'm not like, "Hey, here, yeah, you want some whatever it is we're making?" I mean, you usually tell me no, but I'm not going to be like, "No, you can't have any of this." Like, here's this delicious food. I'm going to sit here and eat it in front of you, and you can't have it.
Yeah, right.
That's just a jerk move.
But I agree. But on the other hand, is her friend, the guest, who...
Can I interest you in some, like, mashed potato, like, instant mashed potatoes?
Yeah. But, well, I mean, the guest, she's letting you stay in her apartment in France, okay? To say she's a bad guest, I mean...
Bad host.
She's letting you stay at her place in another country. She could have made you get a hotel.
Yeah. No, there is that. Like, she was nice enough to open your home... open her home to you.
Yep.
And that is absolutely not something that she had to do.
She didn't split a croissant with you, and so that soured the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean,
wanted some of that fruit. Oh, the beautiful sights of France is just, Paris is just tainted now.
Right. I mean, really, I think ultimately everybody sucks here. Like, you could have absolutely given her some of your fancy breakfast instead of, like, there's some Cheerios in the pantry, go bonkers. Instead, right. You're just like...
Yeah, here's one egg and some mueslix.
Right.
Which is basically gravel and granola.
Right. I got you some fresh grass clippings from the yard, if you'd like.
Some dandelions. It's probably a cuisine over there.
I'm sure it is.
Slather with butter. Now it's French.
Exactly. But you also are, or your friend also was rather kind of a jerk for going up off about how you're such a terrible host. Like, basically, everybody sucks here.
Yes.
You're all terrible. How's that work for you?
Yeah, including you, Sean, for reading it.
That's fair. I will accept being terrible. I will own that, and I will. That's just my burden that I'm going to have to bear. Adam, I'm not going to lie to you. Like, watching my social media over the course of the last week or so really has me thinking there's a lot of people I wouldn't mind seeing get eaten by bears.
Oh, don't bring up bears. The neckbeards will be upset.
I know. You've noticed this too, huh?
Yeah, I had to look it up. I'm like, what is everybody talking about?
Yeah, apparently there's something where a bunch of women basically said they would rather encounter a bear in the woods as opposed to a man they don't know. Apparently there was some TikTok account that started a conversation asking a group of women whether they'd rather run into a man they didn't know or a bear that presumably they didn't know.
Yeah.
Out of the seven, you run into a bear that you actually do know somehow in the forest? Like, Charlie! How you been, bud? It's been too long.
Roar! Sorry, go ahead.
Now, out of the seven women interviewed for the piece, only one picked a man. Bear, man is scary, one of the women responds. A number of women echoed responses given in the original video, writing that in the comments they too would pick the bear over the man. The hypothetical as people split, with some expressing their sadness over the state of the world, and others, like us, cracking jokes, basically. And a lot of people, like the majority of, really seemed to believe that, yeah, the bear would be the safer choice and understand why the woman would choose a bear. And my, you're right. That's drawn out all of the incels, the neckbeards, and the nice guys, hasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
You know, for a lot of guys who spend a lot of time calling themselves nice, they really don't seem to be all that nice. The second that you're like, I don't really want to be around you, and I certainly don't want to sleep with you.
Yeah. Well, you're ugly anyway.
You're ugly anyway. You should be lucky that someone's even acknowledging you. God,
yeah.
You know, you're like a passable 3 out of 10, says the passable 3 out of 10. Like,
I mean, I don't think a lot of these women, I mean, these women have all encountered scary men in their life. I mean, that's just the unfortunate thing about it.
Yeah.
But I guarantee they probably haven't encountered a bear either. They probably haven't encountered a bear in the woods because they're big. They're big, and it's not like a Disney movie, okay?
And oh, but they're so cute and cuddly.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. And if you sneak up on them accidentally, or if you look tasty, they will mess you up. Or if you got food on you and they want it, they're getting that food.
Well, that's when you just toss the food and go book it in the opposite direction.
Right.
Really, the one time where it's really going to be an issue, like, if you're between them and their cubs,
oh,
then you're dead.
You're
then
done
you are
so.
110% dead.
Yeah.
That's not how that's going to work. Like, it's not going to end well for you. Like, you may be able to get away otherwise, but...
But, I mean, if you encounter another guy in the woods... Yeah, chances are, I don't know what's going to happen. I know there's some real creeps out there.
Oh, yeah.
But then there's some guys that are just, you know, I'm just out here for a hike. Or I'm lost. Help. I'm a bear trainer.
Right? And that's when you get bear sprayed.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, God.
But, yeah, it's... These women on the TikTok videos obviously have made like an educated decision that if, you know, they've been around some creepy guys because they're out there. Right, Sean?
Oh, yeah.
So they're probably like, I'd rather take my chances with a bear because I know what a guy can do. And
yeah.
that's got everybody all up in arms. Not everybody, but the...
It has enough people. It has the particularly... loud and vocal people of the internet up in arms because, you know, most things do.
Yeah.
But it's the same people that, you know, the second that you reject their advances, like, all of a sudden, like, will just blow your messages up with how, oh, you're just an ugly whatever, and, you know.
You don't want nice guys. I'm a nice guy. Why don't you like me? And then just proceed to show how you're not a nice guy.
Yeah, they prove themselves immediately to be the opposite of that.
If you go on TikTok or the Facebook Reels and there's a woman on there, instantly, just watch the comments. It'll either entertain you or infuriate you.
It'll really just lessen, like, completely destroy, if anything, your faith in humanity.
Yes. I mean, because it's always like, you know, I saw there was a, I don't know how I got on there, but there was a woman doing yoga.
Oh, how could you possibly come across such a thing on the internet?
It was crazy. and she was doing yoga and everything else. And the first comment is, well, maybe if you went out and got a job, you wouldn't have time to do yoga. It's like, you know that people who work can also do yoga?
What? They can? That's crazy.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
But instead, she's getting paid to do yoga, and you're not. What I love is seeing a female stand-up comic, because then it's just laden with guys. Not funny. Women aren't funny. I'm like, I have replied back. I said, well, I hear people laughing in the background, and this person has a Netflix special. How about you, bud? How you doing?
Yeah, we've certainly gone over on this show over the years. There's plenty of funny female stand-up comedians. Oh, yeah. Like, you know, like necessarily Amy Schumer doesn't happen to be one of them, but there are plenty that are.
She started out funny, and then she just kind of gets on my nerves. But there's a lot of great women out there. But you get on the comment section, which is just...
Put Bears and Amy Schumer on the apology list now.
Yeah, Bears, Amy Schumer, and the Postal Service.
Yes.
It is frustrating. Those videos, though... I made the mistake of like pausing on one snake video, and now all of a sudden the algorithm just thinks I'm just all about snakes.
Well, can we send the bears after them?
It's usually like snake versus this, snake versus this animal, snake versus that. Snake versus a woman in the woods. It's better than a man.
To be fair, that you know, most of the snakes are still probably more harmless than the men.
Yeah.
To be fair, I mean, half of them, I mean, aren't venomous, and even more of them can't even bite you anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't.
And they're also still not gonna be like, but I'm such a nice guy.
Yeah.
Why are you putting me in the friend zone?
I'm a nice guy.
Which that's the other thing that annoys me so much about these people. Like they get. I'm such a nice guy, but I'm literally only hanging around you because I'm trying to get you to have sex with me. Like, that's always with all these dudes. Like I can't believe she put me in the friend zone. Like, oh my God, this worst thing in the world to have to be actual friends with someone and have an actual deep and, you know, meaningful, like, friendship with somebody. Like, yeah. Oh my God, yeah. I can't imagine something so terrible. And you're not even their friend, really. You're literally just hanging around with them in the hopes that they're going to put out.
Yeah.
Like, that kind of really makes you the opposite of a nice guy.
You know what makes you a nice guy? Being a nice guy.
Actually respecting people's boundaries.
I mean, if you have to sit there and tell somebody you're a nice guy, that should be a red flag to you.
No, absolutely. No one who ever has outwardly declared themselves a nice guy has ever proven to be a nice guy.
Yeah, exactly.
That's just scientific fact. Don't know what to tell you there.
I mean, that was Jack the Ripper's pickup line. Knock, 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 knock. Hey, I'm a nice guy. Open the door.
I'm pretty sure that's exactly how that works.
Vandersloot. Hey, Natalie, I'm a nice guy.
And we wonder why the women picked the bears.
Yeah, right? Roar! He's so cuddly. Ow! Ow!
Still more gentle than the dude.
She was never seen again.
It's all just ridiculous, man. It really is.
It is.
But though, that's everything on social media. No one can be a rational human being anymore.
You get lost in the shuffle. I mean, if you really want to make yourself known, you got to act like a jerk.
You know, the loudest people are usually the stupidest, and the loudest and stupidest are usually the ones that get heard, unfortunately. On that note, these two loud, stupid yahoos are going to hit a quick break. We'll be back. It is happy hour. Stick around.
I'm a nice guy.
Hour as we get set to get out of Dodge here on a Monday afternoon, but we've got a little bit of business to take care of before we get there because there's still playoffs going on, there's still hockey and things happening. So
yes.
And you know, obviously I have been waiting with bated breath to do this since we started today's show, really since last night. So as they say in hockey, let's make fun of the Maple Leafs. Ha 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 ha. Maple Leafs lose again. Knocked out of the first round. First round has now won, I think, all but once in the last 50 years.
They are one of only six teams in the NHL that has never played a game in June. Playoff game in June.
I love it. I absolutely love it. I hate that, unfortunately, it took putting Ratface Brad Marchand and the Boston Bruins over, because that was hilarious watching them collapse from a 3-1 start. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah, that was... they're now beaten and bruised, and they're going on to a bigger opponent. But we'll get to that later. They're saying that Sheldon Keefe is gone. I don't think that's going to fix this team.
No.
But, yeah.
It's not going to fix any of the underlying problems with this team just getting rid of him. I mean, it might not necessarily hurt either, but I don't think it's going to help nearly as much as they think it will.
Well, you've said it so many times, and you're right, that the Toronto Maple Leafs, they're very front-loaded. They got three or four guys you're paying a lot of money to who are talented, but then it was the rest. I mean,
Matthews, Nylander, Marner,
Tavares,
and the rest.
Yeah, like, maybe Bertuzzi. I mean, they were in trouble. Was it game two or game three? Footage of like Marner and Matthews screaming at each other. That this is not a happy family.
Yeah, this core is not going to just not going to stick. I don't think.
And then of course all the slap. He's like, oh. Marner wants out. Matthews wants out. Matthew wants to go play for the Montreal Canadiens. Of course. Absolutely.
Of course he does. Yeah, because that makes so much sense. No, yeah. Clearly he wants to go play for the whatever they're calling the team in Utah.
The Utah Matthews, by the way.
They're just changing.
The Utah Mustaches.
It's really going to be the Utah Gomez Adamses.
The Utah Stupid Mustaches. It was a team I was born to play.
I was always destined to end up here.
So whether they fire Keefe or not, that's not going to help that team. There's a lot to unpack there. And yet, was it FanDuel? They came up with like the next 10 Stanley Cup champions. They've got the Maple Leafs winning the 2025 Cup.
How?
I don't know. But, I mean, they've got that thinking. They got that hockey knowledge, sort of.
I'll tell you why they're doing it, though, because there's a bunch of sucker Maple Leafs fans that would absolutely bet on that sort of thing. Like, they know what they're doing.
You think FanDuel is really after that Canadian dollar?
Yeah, when there's that many of them coming their direction, yeah, I know. Granted, the entire gross national product of Canada is worth about $25 U.S. I get it, but they could corner the market and just take all those fools' money, and then when Toronto inevitably gets bounced in the first round that year, they'll have raked in the dough with basically minimal work other than a minor troll job.
So what does that say about the Wings fans? Because they've got us winning the Cup back-to-back. In 2027 and 2028.
Clearly that says there's a very realistic chance that that's going to happen.
I'm going to FanDuel right now.
Here, take all my money.
Yeah, that'll pan out real well. So we move
on. I'd like to hope it will. Like, hopefully we're not still like sitting here in 2027 and, yeah, well, it's okay. You know, we can't guarantee that we're going to make it, you know, past the... to the playoffs next year. We don't know. There's still a lot of better teams out there than us. Like, I just see Coach Gru going up there and, like, you know, there's a lot of better teams than this one. You know, you can't promise that, you know, anything's going to that we're going to repeat this same success of being within one game of making the playoffs this year.
But 2035 is our I mean, we're in the same division as just pick some Hamilton. I mean, and Hamilton's a tough team. I mean, I guess Syracuse. I mean, they're no slouch. They just start piling on teams.
Just expansion franchise. Like, yo, we're playing in the same division as Hartford. Those guys are on their way up.
we have to face Roanoke every five games or so.
It's not an easy path for us.
And then try to go against in the playoffs against Honolulu. You try it.
You make the trip up to the Yukon.
So,
like, we're not taking out Fairbanks in a Stanley Cup final. That's just too well built of an organization.
Yeah, all right. Now Sandusky, we got those guys. So we're moving on to the next order of playoffs. And Panthers and Bruins, I mean, Bruins, they got beat up a little bit. I mean, they end up winning that game 7, but, I mean, they blew a 3-1 lead. So now they're crippling into Florida.
They're not beating Florida.
They're not beating Florida.
Can I just lay it out there right now? Do we want to just start going down the list and making our picks here?
Yeah, let's go ahead.
Florida in 5. You couldn't beat a fairly top-heavy Toronto team. Like, you almost choked that away. Yeah, Florida's not going to let you get away with that. And they have a bigger... They have a guy who can out Brad Marchand. Gimme Florida in 5.
Bobrovsky is standing on his head. He's hot when you don't want him to be hot, if you have to face the Panthers.
Yeah.
Give me Panthers in 6, though.
Fair. I'll grant you that, but I don't think it's going to be a particularly... I did call Boston in 7, though. I'm just putting that out there. Yeah.
Didn't I call Leafs?
You did call Leafs in 7.
Damn.
Way to go, Adam.
All right, so we move on to the other matchup in the Eastern Conference, New York Rangers and Hurricanes. I mean, we should have picked this yesterday because they've already played game 1. Rangers took that one.
I mean, I kind of had Rangers in 6 anyway.
Yeah, I'll say I'll piggyback. Rangers in 6.
I don't expect that Carolina is going to just lay down and die. I don't believe that the bunch of jerks won't be able to steal one game away, but they're not taking more than 2.
No.
And they're definitely not winning this series.
Now we move over to the West. Dallas Stars knocking out the Golden Knights. I guess they should have put some more people on long-term injured reserve.
Right. Should have put added a whole other team while they were at it.
Yeah.
That's on them. You know, you can't prepare for everything.
DeBoer, Stars coach, he's 8-0 in game 7s. This is the guy you want behind your bench. Stars are taking on the Avalanche. The Avalanche, not too far removed from a Stanley Cup, but there's just too many question marks. I'm going to say Stars in 6.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with you on that. Do I think they'll win in 6, though? I don't know if I'm willing to... Looking at the matchup here, against the Avs, I hope Dallas takes it, because I don't want to see Colorado do well. But Colorado, even as banged up as they've been, they're still a perennial contender, and they're never a team that you can entirely count out. I see this one going to 7, but I do see it going the way of Dallas.
Then we move on to the battle in Canada. Vancouver Canucks, Edmonton Oilers. Canucks with home ice advantage. I'm going to say... God, this is going to be a tough one. I'm going to say Oilers in 7.
Now, this might just be wishful thinking on my part.
Yes.
But it is rooted in the fact that Edmonton, despite having arguably 2 of the best 3 players in this sport right now, there's not a whole lot of depth there. Like, yeah, you got past the Kings, but the Kings were basically cannon fodder.
Yeah.
And you don't have a goalie. You don't have competent goaltending in Edmonton. I'm sorry, Stuart Skinner, you're expecting me to have a lot of trust here that, quite frankly, you're not giving me a great deal of reason for that. Meanwhile, over in Vancouver, everyone's more than pulling their weight here. Archer Silov's 170 goals against through these playoffs thus far, 938 save percentage. And here we thought that, this team doesn't have a chance when Thatcher Demko got hurt.
Yeah.
Like, there's not, surprisingly, there's not a bad option with that team. Now, granted, you're facing a significantly greater amount of firepower now than you were in against Nashville. But you have a guy in Skinner who gave up a 259 goals against to the Kings. I'm going to say it's going to 7, but this is probably my upset special here.
All right.
Give me the Canucks in 7.
Well, they're favored. I mean, they've.
I'm actually kind of surprised they're favored because I figured, you know, oh my God, McDavid, of course he's going to win. Okay. Connor McJesus got this.
I say they're favored in the sense that Canucks are the one seed and Oilers are two. But yeah. I mean, Vegas has Edmonton winning this.
Well, of course they do.
At least this game.
I would imagine, I don't know what the odds are in the entire series, but I can't figure that they're that good for Vancouver.
Right.
And I honestly, I understand why that is, but I just don't see the I just don't see the back end of that team holding up.
No.
So
it's going to be a good series either way.
Yeah, they're too good to not force a game seven, but I just don't see them moving on to the conference finals. There's our predictions for what little they might actually be worth. Draft lottery tomorrow. Ooh, and yeah. How badly are the Red Wings going to get boned in this one?
Oh, they hold like the 14th spot right now in relation to their record. They'll probably pick 15th.
They'll find a way to have to pick 32nd.
Yeah. They'll move down a slot.
But how are we picking below the team that won the Stanley Cup? This doesn't make any sense. Like, yeah, I don't know. Uncle Gary just doesn't like you.
Do you want to take a guess as who's going to get number one?
We know it's going to be Utah. I'm telling you right now, it's going to be Utah. If it's not Utah, it's going to be Colorado.
You mean Arizona getting with
whatever? Well, they're going to be Arizona or Utah by the start of next season.
Yep.
So that's my call right now. Unless you,
let's face it, we both figured this is rigged.
Yeah, because it pretty much is. On that note, we got to go. A full hour of local original music comes your way next on a little show we like to call Sessions. All being well, talk to you tomorrow at 3:00. See ya.